Good afternoon. This is Susan Gingrich, more commonly known locally as the Herb Lady here in Ohio. This evening we have a very special guest with us. I met him at the convention for New Sun about 2 weeks ago, wasn't it? His name is Dr. Kevin Ross Emery, and I just want to tell them a little about you first, Kevin. He made quite an impression on me when he stood up on stage. We had seen him floating around in the back in T-shirt, baggy shorts for a couple of days, and suddenly he's on stage in front of us, stuffed into a black suit that was a little snug for him, a little tight. And as he started talking about ADD, which is his biggest area of concern, he told us that someone in the back of the room had asked if he was planning to change before he gave the talk. And when he said, "How many times a day does an ADD child hear that? Are you planning to change today?" he had me then. And I listened. I was just fascinated with everything that he had to say. So I asked him to be on today and repeat that wonderful performance. So welcome, Dr. Emery. And I hope you're not dressed in black.
No, I have shorts and a T-shirt on.
That's what I like, yes. Hair loose. It's flying around. Okay, so the first thing I want to say is that Dr. Emery has written a book, and you may want to look this up. It's Managing the Gift, Alternative Approaches for Attention Deficit Disorder. And if I may be so bold, I think that in the description that he gave of a child who is commonly medicated in this culture, I felt like I fit right into that description. And I was one of the less weird people in the room, so I wonder how many of us really are ADD. Or do you want to make a comment on that?
Well, you know, and one of the things we'll get to later in the program, I'm sure, is that in my work, one of the things I saw was that ADD is actually part of an evolutionary process. And when evolution has been going on, as long as it's been going on with something like ADD, then you start to see characteristics of it pop up in more people, though they may not be fully impacted, but you're seeing more and more of it.
I see. So how did you get involved with ADD, and why did you get interested in it?
Well, my primary practice for the last 17 years has been as an alternative coach and counselor, working with people both through herbs and supplementation and energy work and alternative ways of kind of looking at their lives. I pride myself on giving people tools and helping them develop the skills to become more empowered and to move forward in their life. In the process of doing this, I got kidnapped.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I got kidnapped by spirit.
Uh-huh.
And when I say that is that I was actually getting ready to go do a book signing tour for one of my other books called Combing the Mirror and Other Steps in Your Spiritual Path. And I was all set up going up and down the East Coast, Barnes & Nobles and Borders and small bookstores and the whole nine yards. So 6 weeks, I was going to do nothing but travel and do 3 to 5 book signings a week and lectures and talks. And just before I left, I had the two people that I was working with doing some marriage work. One of them came in and announced that he thought he had ADD. He'd gone on. He'd looked it all up. He'd looked at all the things. You know, and he made this thing, and I perceived him and to look at what did this ADD thing look like if he really had it. And I remember looking at him and saying, "Oh, my God, it must hurt to be in your head sometimes. You never stop thinking, do you?"
Ah.
And then I noticed a lot of other different things. Well, that happened on a Friday. And eventually led to me being able to help rebuild the marriage with some insight and some guidance because they were having some marital problems after 25 years. And because he'd retired, it was a second marriage. And suddenly, you know, when he wasn't around 5 or 6 days a week, his wife was very tolerant.
Isn't that the truth? I found out that my husband stands in doorways, but I didn't know that till he retired either. Yeah.
And so... But that was on a Friday, and on a Monday, one of my students that was studying with me in one of the healing systems I teach called me and was almost desperate. She's like, "Can you help my son? Can you help my son?" And the school system is saying that I can't bring him back unless he's medicated. He tells me that he will run away from school if they try to medicate him, because he doesn't want to be a zombie like all of his friends that are on medication, and that if we try to force him at home, he'll kill himself. And I don't know what to do. And the kid was 11 years old. And I said, well, I don't know if I can help him, but bring it in. Bring him in. And, you know, the child had met me, and I remember going in and him being comfortable with me and, you know, kind of me sitting down and looking at this young man. And I remember when I walked out of it, out of the initial interview with him, looking at the mother and all of this anger that was inside of me. I looked at her and I said, don't you ever medicate this child. This child is a gift. And because they don't get it, he doesn't get punished for it. And it, you know, and so it was there. And then I go on this book signing for a completely different book. And in that 6-week time period, I had over 35 different people approach me at my workshops, at my lectures. And ADD was nowhere in anything, any of my advertising, promotions, anything. And they would come up and they would ask me questions. My child is ADD. Is there any hope for him? Is my child broken? Have I done something wrong? Am I a bad parent because I don't want to medicate? And I'm like, why are people asking me these questions at a Barnes & Noble when I'm promoting a completely different book?
I have to tell you this, Dr. Emery. I think it was maybe 15 years ago now. I was in a doctor's office. He's a homeopathic doctor. And he told me that he had a child come in back then who was getting medicated with the entire class at once. They put all the ADD kids in one class, and they all went to get their Ritalin at the same time. It was astounding,
yep.
You know, how many children are medicated.
And so, yeah, no, and the numbers would startle you. They're increasing. I don't have the current number off my head. It's something that I check, and then I don't.
I think it was Dr. Dobson. One time I heard him speak, and he said his solution to ADD would be, since Ritalin zombies out the child, you know, we're trying to make him acceptable to the classroom teacher. He said, but it's speed to the adult. So he said, what we really ought to do is give the Ritalin to the teacher, and then she could speed up to the pace of the children. But he can't find any teachers willing to do that.
Oh, now, that's funny. I bet I could find some teachers willing to do that. I want to go back and I want to pick up 2 points. After meeting with that young child and going through that book signing tour, within less than 6 months, over half of my practice was ADD.
Wow.
Without ever advertising.
Just went. Well, it's what you attracted. You were ready to work with that.
And but one of the things about how many kids actually have it right now, one of the things that they've done, and it's a, in my opinion, it's a marketing ploy, is they've broken it up into a bunch of sub-diagnosis, which starts to get around some of the ADD issues that are showing up when the when everybody's getting concerned with it.
Okay.
You know, when everybody's looking at these rates, I mean, before they started breaking it into a number of different diagnoses and putting it in different places, I know that between 1995 and the year 2000, that the number of Ritalin alone, one of a dozen ADD, but the most popular, prescriptions went up 400%.
Just in a 5-year time period?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, do you want the rest of the story? As
sure,
Paul Harvey used to say?
Yeah.
That was for 2 to 4-year-olds.
Oh, wow. Start really, oh, man, we can't let children be children at all. I had no idea it was that high.
Oh.
So what percentage of children would you say are on medication of some sort?
Oh, medication of some sort? It's up in the 60 percentile now of some sort for something.
Concerning ADD or ADHD? 60%?
Those probably numbers are not as high, though I would say that it's definitely been in double-digit growth every year for over a decade.
Wow. Okay, so we're headed to the point where to be a child, you get medicated out of it until you grow up, right?
Well, one of the things that I want you to be aware of is that there was a law, and I'm not sure when it actually goes into action, but there was a law that was passed that said that kids going into public schools now in kindergarten, I think it's kindergarten, it could be first grade, but it was one or the other, kindergarten or first grade, have to be screened for any kind of mental illness so that they can be medicated before they go into public education.
Right, because the teacher needs a cooperative class.
But hear what we're saying.
I do. I hear it.
Yeah,
I
mean, for any kind of anything that any doctor or any medical doctor or any psychiatrist wants to throw a label on.
And they all have to be screened.
Yes, and the kids are going to have to be mandatorily screened.
In other words, if you send them to school, they're likely to get medicated.
Yeah, for all sorts of different things.
Okay, now I just want to tell you something. I have a PhD in early childhood education, and we homeschooled. And this is one of our issues here, because I appreciate an active child that's mentally alert and interesting and interested. So, okay, so where did ADD come from? You mentioned it was an evolutionary process?
Yes. When I first started looking at this, one of the things that I looked at was, you know, it didn't make sense to me that this just popped up somewhere. And so as I was kind of doing my own development, as it was very clear that I was fully committed into working with this population, because they will steal your heart.
Yes, and of course we're assuming that it's a defect on the part of the child.
Yes.
And I think we need to rewrite that definition of it, don't you think?
Oh, I think we absolutely have to. And I mean, one of the first things that I teach my kids or my adults who have it is that you do not have a disability,
yes.
You have a diffability. You learn and process information differently.
Uh-huh.
And by doing that you're not going to fit into the prescribed ways of doing it. Also, one of the things I want you to keep in mind is about 80% or so of the problems or more that people with ADD have are environmentally influenced from the outside in. They're problems that are created either by their environment, their diet, or by a lack of understanding or knowing how to deal or manage with the individual.
Which you will go over as we go through the rest of the evening here.
Oh, right. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to go over as much as I can possibly go over, and we'll just see where the directions of things go. Now, at some point, this is actually also open for people to either call in or email or type questions.
Yes, and I'd like to get some phone numbers about that. You can call in a toll-free number at 1-877-876-5227. In Canada, you can call in at 888-810-8322. And the international web, people can call 530-876-3222. And we appreciate, we'd love to have calls and have people ask questions. Also, would you like to give a website, Dr. Emery?
Yep, there's a couple of, the first one is Managing the Gift. If you go to Managing the Gift, it's got some information about the work I do, about the book. You actually have a place where you can submit a question or a problem to me, and it gets emailed to me. Also, you can go and request if you'd like to get a copy of the book. The book is available on Amazon.com. You can go in if your local Barnes & Noble or Borders doesn't have it. They will order it, but they may have it right on the shelf. But that is, again, www.managingthegift.com. So back to the evolutionary process.
All
right. I looked at it coming in about at 150, closer to 160 years now, because I've been working with it for almost a decade. And we look at around the 1850s, when you started to have more and more kids being born who today would be qualified as ADD.
All right.
These were your Alexander Graham Bells, your Thomas Edisons, your Freuds, your Einsteins, your Picassos. These were the architects for the 20th century.
So you're saying ADD might just not be a gift instead of the detriment that we think of it.
Oh, it's absolutely a gift. In fact, if you look at, let's say, Alexander Graham Bell, and if you looked at the biography, and I believe there's an autobiography or some stuff from his private collection, he was considered the village idiot, never graduated school. And if we had had, if we'd been smart enough in 1850s to medicate him, or the 1870s, 1880s.
We probably would have.
Okay. We'd still be talking with two tin cans and a piece of string.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, but these were the architects, and people said to me, you know, did TV create ADD? Did, you know, computers create ADD? Did internet create ADD? No. ADD created all of these things to support more and more of us stepping into a greater part of our capacity. Because when you look at it, Susan, what it is it's actually using more than that mythical 10% of the brain that we were all taught was what we use.
Right.
These individuals are using more of their brain. Now, the problem is that in doing this, they're getting information overload at times, too much stuff is coming in, and they're not being supported enough through organization, through diet, through environment, through support to make all of this click and come out seamlessly. Because, you know, what do we want? We want the cookie cutter perfect everything. Child, parent, home, white picket fence,
mm-hmm.
all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And
an ADD child is not a tidy thing, is it?
No. ADD children are not tidy things. And they are here to get right in our face and mm-hmm. make us look things and ask us questions that we would never have thought of asking
mm-hmm.
and set our world on the ear, you know? And that's what they're supposed to do. That's part of what they're here for. So now there have always been people like this. I want to make this clear. There's always been people throughout history. And one of my favorite examples is, you know, Leonardo da Vinci today would be considered ADD.
Okay.
Okay. But there was only one of him that picked up the world and turned it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you had a few other people, and there were always people that just seemed to be outside of the natural flow of human evolution. There were always little ringleaders. And that's why the 20th century was the most technological, advanced, progressive. More things happened in that 100 years than happened in the 1,000 years before of it.
So you're saying that we need to look at ADD as not a disease but as a gift, as the brain working its way into its full capacity.
Excuse me. Definitely more of its capacity. And ADD are not just gifted with the brain. The ADD has a physical component, an emotional component, an intellectual component, and then an energetic or spiritual component to it. You know, we don't get away with making this one-dimensional.
Now, I worked with gifted and talented children for about 3 years, and one of the things that we found out is that they're always picking their own projects and going with them. They don't sleep much. You know, they're busy. And they're off and running all the time. And keeping up with that was such a wonderful challenge, you know, to do. And it was just at the beginning of computers. These kids were right on the edge of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, a very interesting thing is, you know, you must remember with your background when we actually had started breaking out a lot of gifted programs.
Right.
Okay. And we had the gifted programs. And there's a whole criteria of what makes a child gifted.
Mm-hmm. But they had to be able to behave, really, to be in my program. The teachers would sort out the really true ADD ones. I had to fight for those, really.
And
yeah.
One of the things is that if you look at what makes a kid ADD and what makes a kid gifted, and you look at just the simple criteria,
mm-hmm.
they're identical.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking here.
They are. I've gone through the checklist. I have a presentation where I put it up on PowerPoint.
Right.
It's the exact same list.
Uh-huh.
But one of the things I want you to understand that happened was you can't justify medicating a gifted kid.
Yeah, you medicate one that is a problem to the rest of the classroom.
And instead of saying, this is a really gifted kid, and maybe I need to look at something such as, are there problems at home? Are there problems in the diet? Is it that he's bored, she's bored, that, you know, can I look at all these other things, or do I want to create, you know, do I want to create a diagnosis? Because diagnoses are popular.
Yes, yes.
You know.
And then you have a problem and you can tell everybody about it. Right.
And you can fix it. And for every legislator that we have in Washington, anybody that has any kind of power, that has any kind of vote on the Hill and on all of this stuff, they have a minimum of 2 full-time lobbyists that are associated with pharmaceuticals.
Okay, so and that's why medicine has become so popular then. That answers the next question here.
Absolutely. I mean, you want to look at what we've created, and in looking at some of this, you know, it's a billion-dollar a year industry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the ADD medication is now.
Right, right.
ADD medication. That's a pretty strong reason to want to not support alternatives.
Uh-huh.
Now, I have not checked in the last probably year because I just stopped checking. But one of the top organizations that are out there to support children and adults with ADD is an organization called CHADD, a nonprofit organization. Have you heard of it?
No. What is it again?
CHADD, C-H-A-D-D. And they do have some interesting tips and techniques. But if you read all the way through all of their stuff, all of their literature, as was the last time I read it, it always ended with, and you should check with your doctor about the appropriate medication.
Yes. Yeah. That's
now,
the key. That's to protect you from doing something illegal.
No.
No?
No.
What then?
They really push the medication because the drug company that makes Ritalin was the organization that donated the money to launch CHADD.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And are still one of their primary donors to keep the organization going. And in fact, CHADD had a national conference after my book came out, and another book came out by an MD named Sidney Walker. And it was,
can you remember the name?
I'm trying to remember the name of his book, and maybe it will come to me. But it looked at the fact of that we were way over medicating, that, you know, that medication was doing things like hiding the fact that these kids were having allergic reactions or were having abusive situations at home or all of these things. And both him and myself could not even get return calls to speak at the CHADD convention because we were anti-medication.
Right. Okay.
And as CHADD has expanded and gone into more private and smaller, sometimes I can actually, you know, it can shift chapter to chapter a little bit. But if you look at the national organization, if you won't toe the drug line, they won't let you speak at their convention.
I see. And even my sister, who works in the public schools, tells me that, for example, sugar has nothing to do with it. And she'll say, now, don't consult with this child. I need them on Ritalin because I can't stand them otherwise. And, you know, so we get resistance locally as well to doing something besides the normal drug. Why do we think of that as the norm? I mean, that's what we really do.
Well, and some of that is, you know, and you want to look at it. You want to look at it from a perspective also that besides the fact that it's a huge cash crop and it continues to support a growing movement in this country to develop sheeple.
Okay.
Apathetic people who feel like my vote doesn't make a difference.
Wow.
I don't care. You know, and most of the organizations that are out there trying to get you to vote 9 times out of 10 are trying to go out and get you to vote if you're going to vote for who they want you to vote for.
Right.
These are not organizations that get you to vote because you should vote. They don't come up and say, hey, I don't care who you're voting for, I'll take you to the elections.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what we hear. Mm-hmm. The Democrats are out chasing after the Democratic, vote, and the Republicans are chasing up the Republican vote, and they'll do busloads of people. But let me tell you, that busload would get turned around if you were on the wrong party going into town at the voting booth.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so it's about sheeple. It's about just following along. It's about not asking questions, not being rebellious. For a country that started as a country of rebels, we've almost made being a rebel illegal. We've definitely made it unpopular.
Mm-hmm.
And we ostracize our rebels. So here are these poor ADD people whose natural instinct is to be rebellious.
Right.
They don't stand a chance.
Mm-hmm.
Of course we're going to medicate them. The other thing we have to look at is we have a broken education system.
I agree completely.
We have an education system that is not challenging a lot of our kids, that was created based, and you must know this with
mm-hmm.
your background.
I do, I agree.
The original education system was based on what? Do you know?
What are you getting?
What model?
I can't think of it right off the top of my head here.
The factory system.
A factory, yeah, absolutely. The idea is to make good little workers.
The traditional, when they went to set up education on a national public level, they looked at what worked, and it was the factory system. And I had a superintendent of schools that I was working with whose doctorate was in education, and he sat right across the desk from me, and he looked at me and he said, "You have to understand public education was based on the factory system. We put them on the conveyor belt, and as long as more people get through than fall off, we're successful."
Uh-huh. Yes.
But these are not car parts. These are kids.
Right. And we're trying to create whole kids instead of pieces of people. Yeah.
And now...
Or cogs in the economic system.
And I was fighting with the superintendent about that the way that this was set up for this kid, there was no happiness, there was no joy, he wasn't getting any kind of education, he was getting completely lost, that he was brilliant, and everyone said he was brilliant, but no one could take the time to help him discover or work with his brilliance. They just wanted to push him through. And that's when he gave me this, "Hey, as long as we get more kids through than fall off, we're still successful."
So they weren't interested in the individual. Yeah.
I mean, here's the rest of the story.
Mm-hmm.
I always have a rest of the story.
Okay, what is it?
The kid we were talking about was his son.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I was fighting against him to get a better, more appropriate education for his own son, and he was turning me down because it would look bad to the district.
Wow. You mentioned a child that you worked with at the convention who was in junior high. You
yep.
turned him around. Were you planning to talk about him?
I certainly can. And I do want to make sure that I do want to give that little pop.
Oh, yeah. Let's do that first. Okay, the little test questions that people can ask, which might help them decide if they or someone they love is gifted.
Yep.
Okay, what is that?
And I only gave you a little bit of it at the convention, which is what you made you go, "Hey."
Me too. I want to be one.
I want to be one.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. And first of all, I want to make something very clear, which is I am not saying that there are not some issues, that ADD is not a double-edged sword, that there are not special considerations, that these kids at time don't take more time or attention because they don't fit in the proper education mold. I don't want anybody hearing this thinking that I have this la-la, these kids are perfect, and we should all be more like them. Okay?
Okay.
But I've been in the trenches working with these kids, and I know how difficult they can be. I also know how to work with them so they can be far less difficult.
And quit breaking your fingers while you're working with them. Right.
Okay. So, when people want to know, do I have ADD, does my child, does my husband, does my parents, I get all the questions. I say, well, here's a few questions to ask and see if this applies to them or if it applies to yourself. First of all, are you brilliant, either in a very generalized or specific way? There is some kind of brilliance, and sometimes that brilliance can be very, very focused brilliance, like in one area. They can be a genius, and the other area they can almost be like the old idiot savant,
right,
or the absent-minded professor. Your absent-minded professor, I will bet you 8 out of 10 times was ADD.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are you creative? Is there a creative streak? No matter how that comes out, but there is that very creative aspect to it. Do you tend to either hyper-focus or multitask? And this is an important one because people say, oh, well, they can't, how can it be a gift? They can't focus. Well, they can focus if you can give them something interested enough to engage their intellect. If it's interesting enough, they will hyper-focus. Not only do they hyper-focus, and this moves to the next criteria, when they are interested in something and it has caught their attention and they see value and worth, they will become an instant expert. They will study it, research it, go until they are satisfied that they have a real handle on it. So they learn about it on Monday. They're at a bachelor's level by Friday. They're working on their master's through the next week. And 2 weeks later, they're at a PhD level in whatever subject interested them.
I got it. Okay.
Because they love to learn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say, oh, you know, they don't do well in school. That's right. They don't do well in school because they love to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody who really loves to learn is not going to do well in public education.
That's not about that. It's not about taking off and learning on your own in public education. It's about learning that thing which they're putting in front of you.
Well, I call it the vomit system of education. We shove it down their throat, and if they vomit it up in the right order, we kick them to the next grade.
That's great. Okay. Yeah,
okay.
Regurgitation, right? Okay.
So, you find that what goes on in your head is more interesting than what's going on around you. And this goes back to the multitasking thing, because with multitasking, it's like, well, I've got to do a half dozen things because I've got to do something that's engaging all of this intelligence. I've got to have all of these different things going on. Or when they're up there talking and they want to get the information in at 78, keep talking, come on, I'm interested, talk to me. What they're hearing at the front of the classroom is usually a 33-speed record going, wah, 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 wah. No matter what, you know, of course what's going on in their head is more interesting. It would have to be. You know, when 5 minutes into a 45-minute lecture, they already know the outcome. Who wouldn't be bored for the next 40 minutes? Okay?
Okay.
So, then we're looking at when they get that interested in it and they start to go through that instant expert phase, they have two natural urges. One is to improve it, and the other is to share or teach it. We're dealing with people who are inventors who want to make it better. If you say to somebody who's got ADD, why do you do it that way? And you go, because it's always been done that way. You might as well wave a red flag in front of a bull and say charge. Because they're going to think either, A, you don't know, or B, if it's always been done that way, then isn't it time it changed?
Yeah, or let's find out why you cut the ham to fit the, you know, fit the pan, whatever. Yeah, go ahead.
Why is it done that way?
Yeah.
And so, but as they're learning something, they're always trying to see, is there a better way to do it? And sometimes it's the perspective they use. If you listen, you can tell. And sometimes, you know, when I talk about them being brilliant, and I literally had this happen when I was just first getting involved, when I was on that book signing tour I was telling you about, and I was in the Baltimore area, the Baltimore, Maryland area, and no, it was after that, but I had this woman and some kind of conversation came up and I talked about ADD being a gift. And this woman came up with her, I'd say he was about a 10-year-old with him, and her mother and her sister. And she walked up to me and she goes, I'd like to hear how this is a gift.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay. And I looked at her and I said, honey, this child's problem is not ADD, it's their mother.
Wow.
And she stomped off, and then the mother and the aunt made apologies for her and said, we really want to talk to you, and we really, you know, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, they tried to smooth it over, and they were really interested. But, you know, the point is these kids will see things, and, you know, this mother could not see how brilliant the child was. I talked to the child for a while. This child was brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
But this child would ask questions that aggravated the mother, who was not nearly as bright.
Exactly.
This
That's
child
the problem
would ask,
with most gifted kids.
Yep, and this child would ask questions that would irritate a teacher. This child would ask questions which wouldn't make sense to the person getting the question, and the person getting the question would think it was completely irrelevant. But if you really talk to that child and ask them, there was a thought process, and you, they were asking you questions because they were sitting on the planet Mars looking back at the Earth.
Right.
And we're sitting here on the Earth going, what is that? That's a stupid question. No, it's not if you're sitting on Mars. So they see the world differently. They see it from a different perspective. And henceforth, seeing it from a different perspective, if you really listen to their questions, sometimes you can get a glimpse of their brilliance.
Right.
It's listening to the questions they ask and not the answers they give, because sometimes the answers they give only show the fact that whatever you're talking to about is really boring them. It hasn't interested them. It hasn't engaged them.
And they're trying to get you off their back.
Yeah, they're just trying to. Now, I remember I had this 11-year-old come to a six-hour ADD class that I was teaching. Six-hour ADD class, 11-year-old. The mother was like, oh, my daughter will never be able to sit in this class.
Right.
The daughter's sitting there. She's sitting there. She's sitting there. She's doing well. She's doing well. The mother is really stuck on some concept I'm trying to explain in this class. And finally, the daughter looks around and said, Mother, would you please shut up? I'll assign you when we get home. Let him move on.
That's great.
So, going on, and they want to share or teach it. If you've got an ADD kid in your class, if you're a teacher out there, take what they really like or they're good at and hook them up with the slowest kid in the class. They'll teach that child.
Yes, yes.
They'll show that child what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Emotionally, do you either tend to flatline or be very expansive or explosive? Do you have no reaction, or is it an overreaction? No matter how old you get, there's always a childlike quality to you.
Yeah.
And part of this comes from a kind of innocence. It's a kind of innocence, and that innocence is sprung from the fact that they tend to be inherently fair and just, and they don't understand some of the stupid things that we just take for granted. And they, you can get them to the point that they understand that they exist, Susan.
Uh-huh.
But you can never make them understand why it would happen. So
the hard questions of life.
Yeah.
And it really matters to them.
And it really matters to them. Mm-hmm. They just really don't get, like, why would we destroy the rainforest when we know it's going to change the whole climate of the world?
Mm-hmm.
Why would we not do something about greenhouse gases when there's global warming?
And with that going on in your brain, eat your breakfast, be at school at 9:02, et cetera, doesn't make sense to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so in this, there is this innocence. And I've worked with ADD people from 3 and 4 all the way up to 80. And I can sit down and once they trust me and they're comfortable with me, and this leads to one of the other criteria or one of the other questions to ask is, they usually have a sense of something that they're here to do for the world, to give the world. And they want to make the world a better place. But sometimes, you know, it's hard. And I know that some of the people listening to me, especially if you're a school teacher or you're in a place where you deal with a lot of ADD kids, you say, I don't see that. I see them, you know, getting angry and they're swinging their hands and they're running all over the place and they're disrupting me. Well, you're seeing a child, whether we want to look at it as being this word or not, but you're looking at a child that's probably being abused. Not as we traditionally think of as abuse, but that is eating things that they are having allergic reactions to that don't agree with them, forced into environments that are painful for them, frustrated by the adults who are supposed to love them, protect them, nurture them, and educate them, that don't have a clue what to do with them.
Okay, well, so what do you do with them?
What?
What do you do with them when you start working with them? What kinds of advice do you give to parents?
Well, the first thing is I won't work with an ADD child who doesn't agree they want to work with me.
That makes sense.
And I run about 90%. 90% of the children, if I sit down and have a discussion with them, will say, they'd like to work with Dr. Kevin or Dr. Emery or whatever, depending on their age. They would like to have another appointment. I more often than not find that if I stop working with them, it has more to do with the choice being made by the parents than the child. It could be financial, or it could be that the things that I am asking that are needed for support are too overwhelming. The parents don't feel like they can do it, or they're tired of fighting the battles. Or as one mother said once, hey, you know, I take my lithium, my husband takes his Prozac, my kids all get their medication when they leave school, and I have a nice life. Why would I want to change it?
Woo.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, but the first thing that I do if I'm working with a child or an adult is we'll talk to them about what it's like to be in their life. I let them know that I understand that what it's like for them to be there, like that young man I was talking about at the convention you heard me talking at.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When he knew that I knew what he was going through, he could then trust me. When I talked about how difficult it might be, must be, or how it must feel, he could hear that. When I critically thought through things with him, and that's so key, you've got to critically think through and in dialogue educate and work with these kids. It can't be monologue, and it can't be black and white ultimatums. Don't work. They just don't work.
Because their head is busy anyway. You get into the boil with it, and you can help to create that rather than tell it what to do.
Well,
yeah.
part of what it has is it has what I affectionately call, and actually this is not in the book, and I do have a sequel that will be coming out of the book, to the book, a couple of them actually. But they have what I call a bullshit filter.
Don't they know?
And it's an automatic brain filter, and it kind of kicks up and says, I don't see validity, I don't see importance, I don't see value in what you're trying to tell me or whatever, and therefore it discards and it doesn't register.
And that can be very affronting to the adult working with them when they stick their hand up and say bullshit. You know, that's where we get angry with them.
Yep. And mm-hmm. Part of it is, you know, I had this young girl who she was 9, and I had worked with her the year before. We got her all straightened out. She was doing really well, no medication, was pretty much getting straight A's and everything but spelling, and she was flunking spelling.
Uh-huh.
And they tried everything. I had worked with her at the end of the last school year during the summer. The parents had, you know, she was all set. I stopped working with her, and they didn't bring her back to me until like November or December. They all thought they were going to be able to get around whatever the issue was that she was flunking her spelling, because she was getting A's and everything else. And they kept on, and they tried everything. And, you know, and even though I had warned them when I had worked with the girl earlier, rewards don't work, because bullshit is bullshit, if that's
right.
What the mind identifies it of. And if you
right.
identify that it's not being used as bullshit, but fertilizer to grow something, then it might have a value.
Mm-hmm.
And so they finally brought me back, and it took me 15, maybe 17 minutes to explain the value of why she would want to have spelling. And there was a whole process I went through, and if we have time, I can go over it. But I know I want to finish this list I have on the computer
right.
of things, of questions. But in that, she finally got it, that spelling had a value. And I think she got on a Wednesday, she got a 90 on her spelling test that week, and she got straight A's and never missed a word the whole rest of the year, because it had value.
I see.
All
okay.
I had to do was give it value in her mind.
Okay.
And it was all about a dialogue and exchange and listening to her.
And prior to that, all you had been offering her was conformity, which is something that is not a value.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, right.
What she'd heard before is, oh, well, if you get an A on spelling this week, we'll take you out for an ice cream.
Band. Right. Yeah, because that is the standard treatment in schools right now, the behavior modification approach.
Yep, Yep. Will.
Oh, it does not work on them.
No.
Because if you look at the moral development, I'm trying to think of the name of the guy, starts with an L, I believe. He talks about behavior modification basically at level two, and we human beings have been, you know, there are seven levels, and when you're operating at a level five or level six, you're not interested in just a reward approach. And they're brighter than that, so they want you to treat them differently. They want you to be treated more maturely.
Yeah.
Maslow's hierarchy of needs. That's what it is, Maslow. Yeah.
Yep, okay, yep, I understand what, yeah, I know what you mean.
Okay.
And in this case, Susan, again, what it was about was I listened to what she had to say. I dialogued with her.
Mm-hmm.
My conversation was all based around critical thinking skills. We found a value. It snapped into place. Her behavior changed.
Right.
Now,
okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so let me quickly finish up this list.
All right.
An ability to both have heightened awareness as well as complete obliviousness.
That's me. Okay.
Okay. Just, you're there, and you're so intense in something, you notice things that everybody else missed, and you completely miss what everybody else saw. A passion to do something to make the world a better place. We discussed that one. A lot of chemical, food, and environmental sensitivities with these children and adults. And you just have to... you just have to identify them and eliminate them and deal with them, and it's just part of reality, and it's so tough. I can clean up a diet and environment, and then Grammy comes over and says, oh, they're just a little kid. They should be able to have an ice bowl of ice cream, and then they're crazy for the next 3 days.
Right. Ice cream's got to be the worst. I know in my own case I've had to look at wheat allergies, sugar, and dairy. They're all extremely detrimental to me. And that's hard to explain to your host when you're traveling, you know.
Oh, yeah, because you're just being quirky.
Right, and I'm just being difficult to be with, you know.
Yep.
And our whole family, we have to be careful of those, particularly those three foods and red food dyes. And that yellow dye and Mountain Dew, oh, you forget people's names on that one.
Yep.
But those are some that I've had to discover. And I really recommend it. Kids that are bouncing, you know, and difficult to even make contact with, you want to look at those chemical things first, don't you?
Oh, yeah, chemical, food. Then we have to look at, I mean, we're not even going to be able to, I mean, we could do another whole show on things like forced inoculations and vaccines and
right.
All of the places that we're poisoning our children. And but then the other thing I look at is, I mean, they're also natural-born rebellious. They're here to challenge. And they may be very quiet passive, it may be a very out loud, but there's a natural born challenging. Again, and that goes back to, I'm not going to accept it just because you said it was so.
Tell me why.
Tell me why.
And make it good.
And explain, and engage me, and treat me like a person.
Yeah. Right.
And then there's a natural empathy, mm-hmm. Which... Empathy, I'm sure you understand the concept of, but some of the listeners may not, where they actually can take on and process other people's emotions as if they were their own.
I take on people's pain, physical pain, as if it were my own.
Yep.
I have to be very careful of that.
And
yeah.
That actually falls in the empathy field.
Right, right.
And I had a child that I was working with, and Child Protective Services wanted to talk to me because the teacher had reported that the child was showing signs of being sexually abused. And I knew this child wasn't being sexually abused. I was working with the parents. I was working with the child. I'd been working with them for several months. And I looked and I asked, and they asked me the questions and I told them. And then I went and said, ask the teacher if the child has started hanging around with somebody new, if there's been somebody new in the class, if some kind of friendship has changed. Who is that child's best friend? A child had been transferred in like a month earlier. And had latched onto this child, and when they investigated, that was the child that was being sexually abused.
Wow.
And this little ADD child was actually acting it out for him.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Okay. I know you work with herbs, too. Are there any blanket comments you could make about herbs or minerals that you find are necessary or useful?
Well,
a generalization, perhaps?
Well, generalizations are hard. What I'm gonna put two or three things out here, and one is gonna be terribly self-serving, and I'm honest enough to own it and claim it ahead of time.
All right, but
and I'll do that one last. The very first thing is that these bodies are very nutrient oriented, not
mm-hmm.
caloric.
Right.
Which can lead to overeating because they're searching for nutrients. And so if you're looking for things to help in the diet, look for things that are going to give the most punch for nutrients. I actually like, one of the things I like is something that's called Bragg's amino acid.
Okay.
And you can get it at most health food stores, and it's a spray, and it tastes a little bit like soy sauce, and you can put it on the food after it's been cooked, or you can make a salad dressing with it. But it adds a ton of stuff for very little intake.
So that's the trace minerals, isn't it?
No, those are the aminos.
Okay, the aminos. Okay.
Yeah,
what about trace minerals? I get good results with trace minerals.
Trace minerals is something that I use. I use things like sea vegetables.
I was going to say kelp because of the thyroid being low, especially inland here in Ohio. I like to teach them how to chew on seaweed.
Yep, and seaweed's one of the sea vegetables. And so adding things, making choices that add very nutrient-dense things in ways. I love smoothies. I do a lot of smoothies for my kids and my adults. I can make them taste good. I can stick a lot of things in it. One of the things is, you know, I have ADD clients I work with all over the world. I have ADD kids that I've never even met, have only ever met me over the phone. I've done all the work over the phone with them.
Mm-hmm.
From scanning them, from getting the issues, to helping them organize, to making dietary changes. I've done it all, never even met the kids.
Drop that website again in case any listener wants to get in touch with you that way.
Managing the Gift, www.managingthegift.com. And you can send to me there. You can send emails to me through there. And but every protocol I do is individualized. It's where the child is at. Sooner or later, I always do a number of detoxes with the child because they are consistently got chemical and metals issues. And of course, that's all age appropriate and weight and size, but you want to be doing some cleansing. You want to be getting a lot of heavy nutrients in it. And I'm kind of excited, and I don't know whether we'll see it next year when we meet at the convention again or not. But I've actually formulated something that I'm jokingly called at this point joy juice.
Okay.
For my clients, and it has a lot of the trace minerals in it, and ancient minerals, and vitamins, and I've made it all in a liquid format that we're talking about a quarter to a half to a teaspoon up to maybe a tablespoon once a day. Or twice a day if the kid really is testing for it, in a smoothie, in a glass of juice. It's liquid and it tastes good.
Okay, before that one comes out, are there ways to be able to do something similar to that?
Do some what?
How would you mix that before your product comes out?
Well, I don't know if I'll ever get it to the point this product out. Right now, I make it, and I will alter it slightly for every one of my clients.
Okay, so that's available through your website then?
Yeah, that would be available with somebody that actually was working with me. Because at this point, I'm trying to find what the really good medium solution of. I know the dozen or so things that consistently everybody's testing for right now, because I'm just in the stages of it where it's only my private clients. Every client I have gets it adjusted by their personal needs, so it'll be a little more of this, a little more than that, a little less of that. But I will get it to a point where I can really feel like it's a good daily addition.
Okay.
That's going to help them get what they need, have less issues with hyperactivity, better focus.
And that's available on your website. We have one minute left. Is there anything you want to throw in there? And I'd say we need to get you back on sometime and have some more of this conversation.
Sure. Yeah, because I think we only got through the first two questions.
Something like that, yeah.
But we jumped around. Last minute. If the people hearing my voice, if nothing else sticks, This is part of an evolutionary process. It is not a disease. It is not a disability. It is not going away. Medication should never be the first answer. And I want you to understand that these are people who are here to stay, and they function differently, but they are not less abled.
And they have a great deal to contribute to the world, so let's treat them like the world who they are.
Huge, huge. Right. These are your Bill Gates.
Yes.
Seriously, your Tom Cruises, your Robin Williams, the names go on. Self-made millionaires, they had a whole group of them fly me to England to work with them. All self-made millionaires, all ADD, none of them medicated. There is hope. There is success. Thank you for having me.
And think of nutrients, not Ritalin. Okay, thank you very much for coming on, Kevin, and we'll do this again.
Great.
I think there's a lot more to say.
Thanks.
Okay, goodbye, everyone, and thank you for listening today, and we'll be on again next week at 5 o'clock. We'll talk to you later.